As you mentioned, at some point in your life, you decided to take this major jump and to leave UK and to move to Finland, which is not the easiest choice, even if, I mean, you at some point in your life you have to bet and see what's coming from different choices you can do. Why Finland in particular?
When I was a student, I was living in Scarborough in northeast England, and another student at this university was a Finnish guy. And at the time, I was in maybe seven or eight different bands. I was playing drums in this jazzy acoustic thing, and drums in some professional covers band. I was doing my own solo gigs, just playing and singing guitar. I had a duo with this aforementioned Finnish dude, and I also had my other main band at the time was this prog metal thing, kind of with similar styles to Wheel. And actually, our first three songs were songs. So our first three songs in Wheel were songs from that band in the UK, which we just hadn't released or really done anything with. And yeah, it was paid work. I was offered to come out here, and I went from getting paid basically nothing to something I could live off modestly at least. And I just felt at the time, we were in a competition in the UK called Surface Unsigned, and we drove all the way down to this competition with my previous prog bands, and I'd cancelled work to go and do it, and I'd turned down gigs in Finland to do it, which also would have paid. We got there, and the guitarist had just, driven back home to South England and from university and not told anybody, and that was the point where I just realised, yeah, this is the point where I'm going to stop making the wrong choice. So I just took a leap of faith and came out here, and I've never looked back. I love the country, I love the people, and I met all the musicians from Wheel here, so I really can't complain. Finland is a great place to be.
Right, you might kind of break or kill some of the clichés we have about Finland. The fact that it's, I mean, it can be night pretty early, that people are sometimes a bit cold for the first contact. As you mentioned, you quickly adapt to the Finnish life and enjoy your time there.
I mean, I think I might be the wrong guy to break the cliches. I might be the one to reinforce them because, I mean, especially if you go further north, yes, it's night for about 3 months every year up in Lapland. And here where I live in Helsinki, which is in the south, at the worst part of winter, so from kind of beginning of December to end of January, you get about maybe 5 hours of daylight a day. So it's pretty tough during those months. The trade-off is in the summer, the bit that I don't tell you about is you get that much daylight, so you end up with nearly 20 hours of daylight a day, and we're not talking about morning creeping over the horizon sunrise. We're talking midday sunshine staring down at you from the sky. So I think that makes up for it quite dramatically. And the coldness thing, I think it's kind of like British people and top hats. I think there was a time in the past that was really true and reflective of Finland's, but it's changing all the time, and even in the 10 years I've been here, I think there's definitely been a shift. Finland is extremely Western, and I think increasingly people are very open, and I think it's certainly more polite than it used to be. All in all, I think most people would enjoy coming here. Just do it in the summer because the weather is amazing, and in the winter, it's probably not worth it.
All right. So going back to Wheel, in 2019, you released your first album called Moving Backwards. Is there an event or a souvenir that in your mind will kind of sum up the all this period around Moving Backwards?
I don't think there's really a singular event, but maybe there are a series of events that tie into it. When we made the Divide EP, the EP we released before we released Moving Backwards, we actually already had a version of Wheel, the title track on that album. Sorry, not the title track. The track on Moving Backwards that's got the same name as our band, which is deeply confusing, and in hindsight, probably a PR nightmare. But we'd written that one and Skeletons beforehand. We actually recorded them for the Divide EP and realized during the process that the songs really had some legs, and we thought we could do more with them than we'd done on the EP. So we decided not to release them and to save them for the album. So we came out of the gate with, two songs that we felt were really strong, and that kind of defined the overall stylistic theme of the album. So when we were making it, and you know, like with this album, I wrote most of the music for it. Mikko Mätta, our previous bassist, was also pivotally involved in some of the most significant riffs and parts for that record. It felt like we had quite a clear idea where we were headed and what we wanted to do. I mean, it was ambitious, especially because we haven't made a record with this kind of super dense music before as a full album length. But it felt like we knew where we were going. And I think especially the touring we did after that, maybe that's the most memorable bit. Because in 2019, we toured with Sowens Weiss for a total of 2 months. We toured with Catatonia for a week, which was amazing. We played at festivals all over Europe. And just seeing people react to those songs, weirdly enough, that's a lot more memorable than the process of mainly being in my studio here and writing music.
Okay. As you just mentioned, you toured with the Swedish band The Sona, which is, I think, listening to the album, one of the first other band that came in my mind. I think you have a lot of common in terms of dark atmosphere, complex melodies, this kind of melancholy within the music. At that time, I suppose it was it from your point of view also the dream package to tour?
I've got to be honest, I was pretty ignorant about Sowens. I'd heard of them before we toured with them. I think maybe I listened to Cognitive a long time ago, like maybe in 2015, 2016. I think I'm really bad at album names, but their first album I'd heard quite a long time ago. And then after that, I guess we were just so immersed in making our own music, I'd just been a bit blind to the fact they continued to release new things. And just kind of for our management and their management and various people we've got involved, I think it's actually our... come on, I always get these terms wrong. I think one of our publicist is actually has a relationship to Sowens, so they kind of put us in touch. And I just can't say enough good things about those people. We've done tours where we don't even meet the headline band before. Again, I'm not going to name and shame anybody because that's not really the point. I mean, I guess it's especially when you're busy and you're focused on a show, that happens. But the very first night we played with Sowens, which was a gig in Norway, Martin and Joel, who I hadn't met before, just came up to me in Sunderland and said, "Hey, we love your album. It's really great to have you here." And we hit it off right away and had a great conversation. And it was like that for the entire time we were touring together. I mean, we still have a WhatsApp group that members of both bands are in, and we talk regularly. We've been talking a lot about their new album, which just came out, which is great, by the way. I recommend to anyone who hasn't, check out Imperial. And I guess in hindsight, I just feel so lucky that that was our first experience of kind of proper touring, was with a band of such lovely people, because there was none of, I guess, some of the horror stories you hear about it, where there's this snobbery or unrealistic expectations. It was just like a big family traveling together for 2 months. And that was a wonderful experience.
Okay. In parallel, I would say, even if you had strong experience before and strong background, as a new band, I would say, touring with Sowens, do you learn on a daily basis to see how the other guys behave? Martin, as you mentioned, is have like a decade of experience in huge bands. I mean, he's touring for forever now. In retrospect, can you build or learn a lot from that kind of artist?
I think the truth is, if we can separate our egos from what's going on around us, there's always something to learn. And they were so open about their own experiences of recording, marketing stuff, touring. There's everything from how you communicate in interviews through to how to present on stage. And you know, we don't agree on everything. And I think that's great. That makes an interesting discussion. And that's what gives both bands an artistic identity. But, you know, I think it just comes down to what they're doing is really sincere and it's really authentic. And I think what we're doing is really sincere and really authentic. So you just, even the stylistic choices that would be different to what either one of us would go for, I think there's this shared sense of respect and this idea that it all has some value intrinsically. But yeah, Martin and I have many late conversations on the bus just talking about life and art and the state of things. And he's an incredibly kind guy. And he's been a big supporter of our band right from the start. So we really owe a lot to Sewin. We're very grateful for their support.
All right, thanks. Now talking about the new album, so Resident Human, I have this idea that when a band will start to work on a new album, they meet each other, they chat to see where they want to go, and then they decide of the strong line of the album, and then that's the starting point to work on the new record and give the musical direction. Does it work like that for Will, and how what's the process for you to create new songs?
We don't really have a strict, straightforward process, but for the last two albums, most of the time it's been we've had a recent member change, or we need to find a new member, and we've set ourselves a kind of timetable to produce an album. So for Moving Backwards and for Resident Human, it's been a case of we'll find a new guitarist, you get started on the music, let's talk about it later. So after we toured with Sewin last, I keep getting the years mixed up because the last year feels like a blur. We toured with Sewin at the end of 2019, got back to Finland, and immediately started talking about making another record. And at that point, our bassist Mikko Mäta had left the band on tour due to health reasons, and Aki Virta, our latest bassist, who's wonderful and incredibly talented, flew out to cover for him. We really got on, so Aki joined the band, and our guitarist Ronnie Stepanen, the previous guitar player, had decided that he wanted to stay in Finland to focus on his teaching career, and he's got a very young daughter. I think he wanted to be here and kind of be closer to her. And to be completely honest, Ronnie has never liked touring very much, so we weren't hugely surprised by the decision, but it definitely came as a blow because we're close friends still. So at that point, Aki and Santari said, we'll find a new guitar player, you get started on the music. So I locked myself into the studio right here where I'm sat, and I came up with the instrumental parts for Dissipating, Movement, Hyperion, Resident Human, and Ascend, all within this kind of 2.5 month block between mid-November 2019 and just before our headline tour at the beginning of 2020. So that was kind of a natural break because we were touring. That was an amazing experience, by the way. We've never done headline tours, had no idea what to expect, and there were lots of people most nights who were really into it, which is more than we could ask for. When we got back, we did some more tweaking. Santari and Aki started doing pre-production work on the drums and bass, and we had this very long-winded two-way dialogue about, okay, this part's good, but this bit's crap, let's cut that out, let's put this in instead. What if we add a section here? What if we take this out? And at this point, all the songs were instrumental, so there were no vocals whatsoever. And I think at this point, we didn't really have a strong unifying concept for what the music should be. That actually came when we were tracking the drums and the bass eventually, which we did here in Helsinki in a studio called Finvox. And I think it was during recording Hyperion, which we just released, somebody said into the control room that we should just turn the click track off and just kind of feel where that tempo should go rather than try and control it so rigidly. And we've never done that before. And honestly, it was fucking terrifying. But I think it just, that was kind of the direction we chose to go in, was just expressing more of that vulnerability, this humanity, something a bit more honest and raw and less edited than we've done previously. And it was really horrible, actually, trying to make that for the first time, because it's like being caught with your pants down. You know, people can see all the mistakes. But I think the sum of those mistakes existing, or mistakes is the wrong word, these elements of humanity in the playing, this life in it, as opposed to being really rigid and on a grid, I think the sum of that creates a much more kind of sincere and authentic feeling experience than trying to over-edit everything. And strangely enough, because we were doing this during the drum and bass recording, this philosophy definitely ended up influencing the lyrics as well.
Okay. And as you mentioned, so the album is a lot about human feelings and human behavior in general in front of tough events or how can humanity behave the good way or the wrong way, I would say. And you decided to go through two kind of lenses, very contemporary ones, pandemic, George Floyd, and also using, as you mentioned, the Dan Simmons book. Was it important for you to talk about human feelings and behavior with these two levels in mind?
It wasn't intentional. It just ended up that it felt like they fit together, even if it's like yin and yang. You know, the song movement, which was about the rhetoric after George Floyd was murdered, like specifically it was about the way these two oversimplified binary stratas of society were completely at odds with each other, and it became so toxic, and there was so much conflation and false equivalence, and these other kind of, you know, poor debate techniques used to discredit and destroy the other side. And I think that is a real pattern we're seeing happen around most issues these days, that there are frequently fewer and fewer places we are seeing people who are experiencing very different worldviews because of the algorithmic media bubbles we exist within, especially online. And you end up in this place where you think everyone who believes in maybe the other side of politics, for example, is out there and they want to kill you, or they want to take away your freedom, or they want to hurt your children, or whatever it might be. And that's dangerous. You know, one of the real privileges of our job is we get to travel when there isn't a pandemic around the world and meet people from all different walks of life and different religions, different ages. And I think there's so much that connects us and that makes us the same. And I think it's easy to forget it because all of these viewpoints, these windows we have into the world, none of them are accurate representations. They're all distorted either by the person who owns the media company, or maybe the viewpoint of the of whoever's writing the article. And I think that there's much more nuance to it than I think people give. And a lot of these problems, like police brutality in America, for example, I think it's not a black and a white situation. We don't necessarily need to abolish the police force. In fact, I think that's a terrible idea. I think we need to work out meaningful reform that can be done to prevent things like that happening and to ensure accountability when the police abuse their power. There's no other side to that. I think if you look at law enforcement as a state-funded service, so a service paid for by the people living within the state, I think it's completely reasonable to expect them not to kill anybody unless it's absolutely necessary. Not George Floyd, but just about police brutality in general. One of my favourite arguments I've heard for changing this is, surely what it means to be in a free society is you can be a deviant and you can be a drug addict and not expect to get killed by the police. And I think that's a point most people would agree with. So maybe that's a good place to start. And, you know, I don't have any solutions. I just thought observing that was interesting. And I thought the behavior was worthy of a song in its own right. In contrast to that, which was very outward and observing, there were the kind of introspective songs like Dissipating and Hyperion and Resident Human, which all deal with kind of personal growth and coming to terms with reality in different ways. Like Dissipating is considering the indifference of the universe, you know, this seemingly hostile, vast, unknowable thing, which humanity used to think it had dominion over. Like we used to think we were the center of the universe and everything revolved around the earth. And every time we've learned more and we take a step back from that, I think we feel smaller and more insignificant. And there's a danger of nihilism, I think, when you proceed all the way down that path and just thinking we don't matter, nothing matters, what's the point? And I came to a completely different conclusion that actually, if there's not some cosmic overlords, overlords the wrong term, if there isn't some kind of cosmic karma that we're trying to appease, then we're free of any kind of expectation. We're liberated from that. And everything we experience and everything we go through is incredibly significant because it's all we will ever know. There's a similar kind of discovery in Hyperion, which is talking about mortality, the idea we're all on this train journey from being born to dying. And even when we sit still on a couch, for example, we forget that train is still moving. We're still on it. We're still going forward. We have no control over the direction or the speed that we're traveling in, and we forget that everyone else is on this same train journey. And I guess I just started thinking last year, because it was such a weird year, we took a step back from our norms and I started observing my own behavior in a different way, that I'd like to remember to be a bit more empathetic for other people on this train journey, because all of us are having the same existential questions and the same uncertainties, and we're all trying to come to terms with the fact that someday in the future, none of us will exist. and we would all be forgotten. I guess at least nearly all of us, 99.99999% of us, will be forgotten. And again, that might lead to nihilism in some cases. And I think there's, once you realize that this is it, and this is the only thing we're sure we have, I think there's something kind of empowering about that. And you realize that every choice we make, the way we spend every day, the people who care about us, every good thing that's ever happened to us, all of that is loaded with this unbelievable significance, because as far as we know, there's nothing else. No one knows what happens before or after the train journey. There's just the train journey. And I guess it was a really unique year because all of us got to take a step back. Like most people I've spoken to, no matter what their job is, have said, yeah, when everything goes back to normal again, I'm going to do things differently. And there's a spectrum for how differently people want to do things. But I think there is this sense that before, not all of us were choosing how to live our best lives, and we're trying to reevaluate those choices.
Okay. The Moving Backwards and Resident Human will be released about 2 years apart from each other. Do you think it's the natural creative rhythm of the band? A new album each two years?
But there's nothing natural about it for us. Like we pushed ourselves extremely hard to try and get Resident Human out very quickly. And in all honesty, I think we would have made it easier on ourselves if we had a more realistic timetable, because we delayed several times during the process. And it was incredibly stressful. Like I had a bit of a burnout, to be honest, at the beginning of last summer. I think we just took on too much. And it's going to be interesting to see the order we make art in next, because I'm already drafting new ideas. But I think maybe it's just the notion of having a deadline. It makes the whole process a lot less free and artistic. It kind of puts these gates in the inspiration flow. And I think trying to balance out regularly releasing music, which of course we want to do, with giving ourselves the space and freedom to grow creatively, that's a really difficult thing to manage. And I think, like every other band, we're still trying to figure out the right way to do that, if there is one.
All right. Can you tell us how did you work about the cover artwork?
Absolutely. My wife, Anna Colosseos, designs the album cover. She's designed all of our artwork so far. And because the lyrics are about a figurative deconstruction of humanity, so it's looking at the worst and the best, kind of the outward and the inwards, the cover is more of a literal deconstruction of humanity. And there's this idea that here is a person dehumanized because they've been gone into bits. And we started off with that idea. And we were also thinking about old Victorian-style textbooks and drawings and the way insects are labeled in museums. And those were the main inspirations, and she absolutely nailed it. I think it's the best artwork she's made for us so far.
What's your hope and expectation for the future? There's a coming 2022 tour with Epica and Apolyptica. That's the main target for the band?
Yeah, at the moment, we're also looking at touring possibilities before then, if it's possible to do it. And luckily, we've got a great management company. So I think as soon as it's feasibly possible to get out there and play and it's safe to do so, we will be there doing it, especially coming back to France. My mother's French. I used to come and visit every year until I was about 15. I love the country. I love the people. It will be amazing to get back out there and play some music. And for now, I think like everybody else, we're just trying to focus on doing what we can while we can, and hopefully the vaccine changes the game a bit, because we also want to get back out and play some shows.
All right, finger crossed. We'll hope everything will come back a little to a normal.
Yeah, thank you very much. I hope so as well. And
thank you very much for this interview.
Thank you so much for your time. Much appreciated.
And so see you soon, hopefully on tour in Paris.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. Take care and thank you for your time.